on the cell phone.
Okay, so I'd like to call this special meeting of the Port of Port Townsend for Monday, October the 24th, to order. And we'll stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so today is a special meeting, so that means we only can address things that are on the agenda, so we don't have any additions or corrections to it. And so the purpose of today's meeting is the second reading of the, is the third version, which is the second reading of our draft 2017 budget. And so I'm going to just turn it over to staff.
Okay, so if you look at page three, that's the financial statement of the package. It it shows a different format than we've presented previously. It's a more abbreviated version of our budget, rolling up the revenues by location pretty much, or function, and then the operating expenses, rolling those up also. We were asked by the commission to see if we could come to a budget where we would have, coupled with our operating budget and our projected capital budget, where we would not greatly affect or decrease in any event our cash position at the port.
Here, I'll move you.
Yeah.
You're gonna tell him he's muted so that if you
Pete, want I'm gonna mute you, okay?
Okay.
Or no, you mute you on your side. That's what I'll.
Yeah, you mute you so that you can unmute yourself and,
exactly,
and talk if you want to.
You want me to mute my phone?
Yes, exactly. Because we're getting a lot of background.
Yeah, so then when you want to say something, you'll have to remember that you have to unmute.
Because otherwise it'll appear like we're ignoring you, and we never want to do that. I think he's muted.
I understand, I'm muting now.
Okay.
So again, looking at this page three, we've got the abbreviated version of revenues, expenses. We also did that with the non-operating revenues and expenses, kind of rolled them up a bit. Wanted to point out that these revenues make us cash neutral. In other words, no decrease in our cash position. And the difference from the second draft is about $280,000 in revenues. And then the next page is the capital, which really hasn't changed.
That was an increase, correct?
Yeah. The capital is the next page, which didn't really change that much from the second draft. And then the cash flow, we got this with a little more detail also, as far as enumerating the unreserved and reserved cash, beginning and ending, as well as the capital expenses, how much they would use in reserve or unreserved cash. Did I go through that before? I don't recall.
Pete, are you hearing anything? Pete?
Nice meeting
you. I'm hearing about every other word.
So why don't I just do this? I'm going to take you over to Abigail.
Right.
And then when she's done and somebody else talks, we'll take you there.
Hey, Pete?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you look at the cash flow on page five, the beginning year cash, we separated out the unreserved cash and the reserved cash, and then showed total operating revenues less total operating expenses, of course, without depreciation. We separated out the non-operating revenues and expenses in our prior draft. We had netted those. So this just shows you the gross of revenues and expenses, non-operating. Then the debt service, which is the principal payment for the year. The interest payment for the debt is in the non-operating expenses. And then the issuance of bond debt, that's based on the capital budget. And that would basically be cash proceeds for the debt. And then if you look down a few lines, you'll see capital expenses from bonds. And that's the expenditure of those bonds for capital purposes. And then the other capital items, the last four in that list are capital expenses from grants, anticipated, unreserved cash, bonds, and reserves. And that leaves us with a net increase in cash, our cash position by year end of about $1,300. And then, of course, the ending cash we separated out, whether it's unreserved or reserved. As far as the budget assumptions from the second draft, those are all still applicable. I didn't reprint those. I guess I can hand it off to Sam right at this point.
So is that the assumptions you're talking about on page two? Those assumptions are the same ones?
Page two. No, those are, on the second draft?
No, page two of what we have in our packet here.
Yeah, that's a summary that Sam put together for this draft.
Okay, I want to talk about that then.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Abigail. This budget package is responsive to the commission's direction to staff that we put together the capital budget and the operating budget in a way that did not result in a decrease in our net cash position. And Commissioner Hanke, I want to thank you for catching the language that I had in my memo. I did talk about, I put in there that did not depend upon use of unreserved cash, and that is incorrect. You are right, and I thank you for your careful reading, and I'm glad to see that you are reading things so carefully. And indeed, the more accurate way to make that statement is that we are, this budget results in a not having a net decrease in our cash position. That's the more accurate way to put it. So with that, how these things kind of fit together is that, you know, we look at the capital budget, and we have, as staff, proposed the projects to accomplish for next year, and then set using those numbers to then couple that with the operating budget and then set budgetary goals accordingly. And so that is, again, following commission direction to really kind of roll this up to a higher level so that we can set these budgetary goals across the organization. Now, I also understand both you as the commission and the public have a desire for a more detailed accounting of our operations, and that will still be provided to the commission and consequently the public on a monthly basis. So that monthly, more detailed look into the budget is something we'll provide to you every month for your review, so you can see where we're at. We'll also be using those internally with our management team. But for this summary budget, it really brings it back up to what are the budgetary goals for the organization. And we are looking at then achieving our revenue goals in a number of different manners. Everything from more fully capturing the utility reimbursements that we have spoken of, and to that end we'll be installing some meters, etc. We'll also be looking at a really robust review of our leases and making sure that we're actually receiving the revenue that we are due. We'll be looking at a very aggressive marketing campaign, again, across the organization, both for our marina assets, but then within the yard. And so there's a number of different ways that we hope to achieve these revenue goals. With that being said, then, part of that will be both an inflationary increase to rates, and those will again be selected throughout the organization, as well as probably some other rate increases. We are not proposing those at this time because we're really looking at our rates comprehensively, and we'll likely be proposing some rate restructuring, et cetera. So at this point, I think the question before the commission is, does this budget reflect the budgetary goals that you have for the organization that then couples up the capital plan with the operating plan and then sets that goal for then staff to implement? And are you ready to move this to public hearing? So with that in mind, I'm happy to take any other questions that you have. But before we go there, one more thing I also wanted to mention for the capital program is I have used the budget items that were prepared in the capital repair and replacement plan for the most part. Sometimes I went out and got other numbers. And they are of a different level of precision than I am used to having in a capital program. I'm used to having a little bit finer point on the pencil before I actually put them in. But because this is a new way of implementing our capital plan, these numbers are likely to change. And so I'll keep you informed. And then during our any changes to that. So by your approval of the capital program, basically authorize staff to then work on these projects. And then you operate an up to number. And typically we have a policy of within a certain amount of going over that we can continue with the project. Because these will be getting better numbers as we get closer on design on some of these projects, I'll be bringing those back to you and keeping you very regularly informed on that. As the years progress, we'll have a little bit finer point on our pencils before we actually bring the whole capital budget through. And then in our governance retreat, we'll make sure that we have a common understanding of what is that level that staff can exceed the budget without bringing it back for your approval. So we'll make sure that we're have a very common understanding of that. So those budget numbers may change. Make sure you're informed and we're not pulling any surprises on you. And my motto of really striving to have no surprises.
Okay, so I guess my question is, in this capital budget, we just got a bid in for the breakwater. It's a lot higher, so is that going to affect this?
It will affect, so that would have been in our 26, we're still hoping to expend that in our 2016 year. It will affect our beginning cash because that would be coming out of the Bohaven Reserve. So it wouldn't be reflected in this 2017 capital budget. It will be reflected in our beginning cash.
And I also noticed that in the capital budget, since we hadn't finished with the boat ramp yet, and now we realize there's some unfinished things that need to be addressed that we're not going to be able to go after the contractor for, where are we going to have that in the capital budget?
It would be under the operating budget.
That'll be under
maintenance.
Okay.
Maintenance.
There's a clarification I wanted to make, too, on the cash flow. I neglected to mention that. So when you're looking at 2017, that's, as close as we can get right now. 18, 19, and 20, those are also as a result of the CIP plans at this point. But those increases that are anticipated in the operating revenues and expenditures, those are based on history of what we've had increases over time. So it's not based on what we're going to do in rates, per se, but what we've seen historically in increases in revenues and expenditures. We increased it slightly in the revenue side because we feel like with the capturing of new revenues and some new business and capturing actually some revenues that we haven't historically been getting, that we could reach that now. So I just want to make that clear too, because I think there was some misunderstanding that this was proposing rates increased every year by a certain amount, and that wasn't.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that, and I was wondering if you could perhaps clarify a
sure.
bit. And that, I mean, it's, and it, a lot of people are looking at, okay, you got 2016 budget amount and compared to the 2017, which is a little over 13% increase. And what's that represent as far as port patrons and so on?
Sure. Yeah, so again, what we're looking at across the organization as meeting the revenue goals here through a variety of measures and everything from making sure that we are capturing the revenues that we kind of, you know, have on the book, and we have a really good system for that. We're also looking then at a portion of it being just an inflationary index, either a CPI or a CPI plus one, which is a typical inflationary index. And then where can revenues be increased across the organization? That might be in mortgage, that might be in yard rate, it might be in looking at restructuring some of our revenues. As an example, we're not quite sure whether we can do this based upon the loan requirements, but if we were to restructure the 3% marine surcharge and instead capture that either in a hoist operation or in some type of a package of services that we offer there, that we would actually see an increase of revenues overall. So there'll be a variety of mechanisms that we would use for this. And what this does is when we set the budgetary goal at the policy level, then we can, as staff, go back and look at our means and methods of how we're going to actually achieve that. Again, as Abigail has said, you know, as we look historically over the organization, we see about a 4.4 increase average over time. And so while we look at a jump between this last year and what we're proposing for 2017, as we project it out, we're being fairly conservative at about a 5%. That, again, that's 5% overall the organization. So when it comes to things like mortgage rates, one of the things that we're going to be looking at is really a comprehensive review of that rate structure to see how we best achieve the type of margins that we need. And so we're not prepared to bring that forward at this time, but we will in the near future. And it'll be comprehensive in nature and really looking at you know, both Boathaven and Port Hudson. You know, how can we structure this so that we're capturing the revenues that we need to be able to fit within everything else to get these revenue numbers. So it's organization wide, and I think that's the biggest change here, is rather than pointing to a couple very specific line items in the budget, we're looking organization wide.
Yeah, well, the biggest change for me here is that we're approving the budget, and then we're not approving rates at the same time, which is always the way we've done it in the past. Mm-hmm. I'm having to get my whole body twisted around that to understand that basically we're approving this concept that we're not going to have a $200,000 deficit or negative cash. We're going to keep that neutral, and we're going to achieve that by adjusting rates throughout the year as we determine the rates need to be adjusted.
And a variety of other measures as well.
Well, yeah, other revenues too.
Yep, exactly.
So when those other revenues are being contemplated or changed or something, does that then come to the commission? For example, I noticed one thing in here, and that was the EDC. We went the $15,000 increase, and that was back here. So there's a couple ways to do that. And so if we approve a budget that has a $40,000 instead of $25,000, since there are two ways of doing it, one way you could give them just money, or you could, another way you could give them project-specific funds. Mm-hmm. One way nets more from the getting in-kind matches from the community. So will both sorts of things be brought back to the commission?
Right now we have, so you have a couple ways that you delegate authority to staff, and one of them is that you cap the amount of contracts that the executive director can sign. So a $40,000 contract, I believe, comes back to the commission. I think I only have authorization of $25,000.
No, you have 25, but the difference is 15, so.
Right, but the entire contract with him would be for 40, so that would come back to you. And I think the, so, and then we have, and I would actually like to revisit that with the commission in our retreat, are those levels in keeping with what helps us to, and I'm going to borrow my esteemed colleague's phrase here, moving at the speed of business, and so that we can be as nimble as possible. So I'd like to review those levels with you and make sure that you have the judiciary oversight that you hold, and but to allow us to be able to do our staff work at the speed that we need to. So there's contract levels, but then also the rate setting. And I think there's two lenses to look at that through. One is that, I never want to surprise the commission, and so keep you informed. But also, what is on the staff side of, really looking to run the daily business of the port, and what really requires the commission input on it, and is so what is more means and methods, what's more policy, and those are things that I think that we can address at our retreat and make sure that you retain the oversight that that you need, but we also have the nimbleness to be able to conduct our business. And an example might be of, if we want to change what might be a really inconsequential, rate of, say, for example, charging for wash water that might result in, $500 worth of revenue. So do you really want us to bring something like that back for, a two-touch process? And that's not a question that we have to answer today. I think, again, that's something that we can address in our retreat. But at this point, we're not proposing the exact any exact rate increases, because we're still analyzing that, and we'll bring that back for your review.
Well, I think I'm kind of happy with the fact that we've got basically the budget instead of all this other stuff that goes to make the budget, and that the budget is a goal that we've set to be cash neutral this year anyway, and then of course hopefully go up. I'm still kind of not really clear on how
how we're going to do it.
Yeah, how we're going to get from here to there. But I think that we can just see. So, Pete, do you have anything you want to add? Unmute it.
Yeah, so I'm unmuting.
Okay.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So I have heard most of that, and my only comment is, the analogy is an airliner. You got a pilot and a co-pilot, like Sam and Greg sitting there, and the airline pays them a lot of money to make sure the airplane gets from A to B. And I think I'm in agreement that, this is a policy change for the Port of Port Townsend, and I think we really need to say, okay, we're going to pay these people to do the job, not just Sam and Greg, but I'm talking about Eric and Abby and Sue and the whole staff. We're going to pay these people to do a job, and we really should kind of, let them do that job. And I think this is a direction in that way, and I support that.
Well, I support it as well, and I'm looking forward to seeing how you actually achieve this cash neutral goal.
It's ambitious.
So I guess that since I'm sitting in this chair again, I kind of like to hear from the public. So do we have any public comments?
I have a question. Are you going to respond to us, or are we just submitting comments?
I like to respond if we can. Now, of course, some things we won't be able to because we don't know what you're going to ask us. We don't know if we have the answer.
Right. Okay. I have some comments. Jack Becker, Port Townsend. As far as the moorage, so do I understand you're saying the moorage increase is not being decided at this point?
It's not yet determined. Correct.
Okay. Not yet determined.
Yes.
Okay. Then I will save my comment on that. that was a big part of it. I do have a question on this, the spreadsheet on the budget. And it has to do with a little bit of what I talked to you just before the meeting. On this page, that has, and this is year by year, 2014, 2015 actual, and kind of the same. You've got the revenues, the expenses, and then a depreciation expense, and then the net income or loss from operations with depreciation is a $503,000 loss. And then the non-operating, you have a net income of $823,000. Subtract out the operating loss, you still have a net, and I presume that's a total net income for that year of $319,000. Is that correct? Okay, so then going back to that depreciation number, which is $1.5 million, that's a paper loss, right? So the actual income for that year is $1.8 million. And that's for each year you show a positive total net income, and you're also taking about a $1.5 million depreciation. And so wouldn't those totals add up every year to where we would end up?
They would if we had no debt service, because the principal debt service is not in. And the WIP expenditures, the work in progress, all the capital work that we do, that we pay cash, it is not in. That's a different part of the financial statement. And so that's why I put the cash flow together.
Okay.
For people to better understand, because this is an accrual basis that the board does. So I hear what you're saying.
Okay, so that's the difference.
But you're missing pieces.
Yeah. Okay. So this cash flow, is that a complete picture?
That is more complete, yes, absolutely.
And so even with that, the board is still ending with $2.7 million cash in the bank, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the total cash?
Total cash, right. Okay. Which sounds like a lot of money. Does to me. But it really isn't for the board.
Yeah.
Based on the cycles that we go through, the capital expenditures that we have on our plate.
And I noticed in 2019, there's a big drop in the, the capital expenses. Or no, in the, yeah, from grants. And the net total jumps up.
Right, and so I don't know if you want to speak to that. I mean, just because the farther you go out, the less information you have.
Right, yeah. So. And so these projections will change over time. And in particular, these do not give a comprehensive view of the backlog of capital projects that we have. And in particular, you know, I limited the capital projects to the ones that we, to where we basically ran out of bonding capacity and said, okay, well, we'll cut it off at that point. As we both pay off some debt and increase our bonding capacity that way, and as we bring on other grant projects or granting sources, we'll put projects back onto that capital schedule, and so I wanted this cash flow to be realistic in that, like, here's what we can actually do with our current bonding capacity and the grants that we have in hand. Now, we're always looking out and looking for grant sources, looking where our debt capacity, you know, frees up, etc. But This is where we are currently.
Ron, so as I understand this, then in order to do this, we need to go out and borrow an additional $5 million to make this happen. Otherwise, I mean, we're not taking it out of operations or anything. We need to borrow about $5 million. I was adding up the general obligation bonds and the revenue bonds. And so that's a fairly substantial increase in borrowing, and which I think, I'm not against it, I'm just want to make sure I understand this. So we're maxing out our borrowing, and it's like a homeowner that gets a house and the mortgage just is almost crushing. But you do it because you know it's you got to have a house. And just like here, we know we need this port and all the jobs it provides. But at the same time, I think we need to understand that this is a major obligation that the port is assuming. And when it comes time to raise rates, I think the users need to be sympathetic towards the port's dilemma of raising additional funds, because we don't have anything really left to pull from. And so it's going to take a lot of little changes here and there to tweak it, to make this thing successful. And I hope that us users will support you guys. Anyhow, that's it.
Thank you. And Ron, if I could just add on that, I think you're absolutely right. That is to demonstrate, like, then we have maxed out our debt. And the adoption of this budget would authorize only the projects on the 2017 list. And so, you know, it is that, we put together a multi-year capital program so you can look out and you can see what's coming. You can see those pinch points and go, oh, look, we're about to ready to run out of reserves, or we're ready to, and you can start planning for those ahead of time and see them coming. But it doesn't obligate the organization to them. So that the capital program 2018 on out, and again, we kind of cut it back to just 4 years because we're out of debt capacity, as opposed to just a typical, when you line them up with the county comprehensive planning program, you do them in a six-year increment, which is really what we want to get to, is that we're programming out of that. Then again, you're looking for other appropriations, grant monies, et cetera, that you can bring in so that you can lower that that amount that you would have to borrow. So at this point, it went really simple. Here's what we would have to borrow up to our max amount that we have available right now. This is what the CIP. But it doesn't necessarily obligate the organization to those outages. You still have time to contemplate those and put them in a strategy that fits the organizational goals.
Great. So what?
What's
your name?
Elizabeth Becker, and just kind of a quick segue off of that comment that I do believe, you know, as a user of the port, that we're certainly, I am sympathetic to the need for the port to stay economically viable and for users to pay their share. Some of the things that, though, become a question, I mean, in the next 2 years' budget, there's about $200,000 going to fix the administration building, the previous administration building that Fish and Wildlife is in at the port. And from this chart, that's coming out of operating expenses. You know, if you look back at the strategic plan of the port from 2015, it says it seeks to manage its properties using a cost center approach, that each facility be self-supporting as possible. So I would ask that the port do be cognizant of that. Again, for example, of asking mortgage tenants to have a larger rate increase to help offset a cost overrun for that particular project or for the boat ramp or one of those very different cost centers. So again, I think there has been this idea that the users of the port are just against, you know, any kind of rate increase. But I would really love to, see if there is a way to look more at the cost centers. Obviously, not every expense is able to be cost centered out. But for example, a repair on a building at Point Hudson should not be paid for by an increase in merge rate for boat tenants, for example. If it's an improvement in the restrooms, which serve the port tenants or the boat owners, great. You know, that seems very appropriate. of these things overlap and can't be, you know, penciled out, as Greg said, you know, the pen cap, you know. Mm-hmm. But most businesses, there are a lot of the expenses that are specific. For example, a haul out employee is a boatyard expense, not a marine expense. So again, I really would like to combat that perception that the mortgage tenants are asking for unfair advantages in helping to keep the port economically viable.
Jim.
Yeah, my name's Jim Heumann. I'm a mortgage tenant, and I had a question. Did I understand right that the budget's going to be approved without any sort of information about what rates are going to be?
Yes.
And then they'll just show up in our bills, or will there be any opportunity to discuss what those are going to be?
Typically, I think we have done the mortgage rate increases on as of January 1st. We're not sure whether or not we'll be done with our analysis at that point. Abigail typically give like a 30-day notice, like we send out and go, you know, the next month will be a rate increase. And we would bring the rate considerations back to the commission. So. And we will be sorting out as part of our of where the commission wants to draw that line of rate increases that they want to approve and what they want to have staff be able to remain flexible with. So regardless, you'll have commissioner oversight, and then we will bring any proposed rate increases to a commission meeting first. So it would not just come out of the blue. There would be a public airing of that work that they were actually instituted.
Okay, so we would get an opportunity to
right.
To weigh in.
And if you subscribe to the notices that on the website, you'll get a notice that has what the agenda is for each meeting. So you won't have a meeting that has the rate discussion in it go past without you knowing about it.
Okay.
It'll still be the two-touch system as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in other words, we won't be able to surprise you when you're off in Tahiti.
Okay. It scares me a little when you say we'll just be able to do these little things at a time without telling anybody. But as long as, she was...
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd like to be able to raise rates here and there without... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think there was a not tell anybody aspect.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yes. We conduct our business in the open here.
Yeah. I think that what she's trying to say, and the way I understand it, is that we're wanting to not just say 5%, you're done. We want to take a real good look at it, figure out where there's things that are too cheap, where there's things that are too expensive, where there's things that we can optimize, like the waiting list needs to complete over. There's a lot of things that you do that's going to affect this, and we're not there yet, and we're going to get there, and it's not going to get there without your input.
Yeah, fair enough. That sounds good.
Bill.
Well, I guess Bill Putney, District 2. I guess I'm sensitive to the mortgage tenants' plea for having a cost-based scheme. That assigns costs just to an operating unit, if you will. But I'm concerned that this is ignores the health of the whole animal. That you can't just say, well, you know, ignore the foot because. The head is doing okay, or you know, the tail is fine. So I think the whole animal, the whole port, has to be solvent for the individual elements to do well. I don't think that mortgage is just mortgage. Mortgage is also about the convenience of having the marine trades there. Mortgage is about proximity to other facilities in Port Townsend. You know, there's two ways to look at any kind of rate. One is what the market will bear and where you are in the marketplace, and the other is what things cost. And I just don't think that what things cost ultimately is the answer for everything. So I'm just concerned that that test not be the only test for rates, especially when the port has some tremendous challenges financially ahead, and it just can't be hamstrung.
Great, thank you, Bill. George?
I'll comment later.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
Frank Converse.
Frank what?
Converse.
Frank Converse.
And just two points I wanted to make. One was just sort of the overall, the sort of your predilection to, if there was a deficit, that you address it by increasing revenues, and I want to encourage you more to decrease expenditures where possible. If you have this $200,000 you need to make up, maybe some of these things on the list could get cut or minimized. You don't always have to get more money, you just spend less. And that's sort of a viewpoint I'd like to encourage. Mm-hmm.
And I think that if I'm not mistaken, you saw, in previous budget discussions, we've seen some decreases they've actually had in the budget, which I was pretty happy about. I thought we were doing pretty lean, but I think they made it leaner.
Yeah.
You can always go leaner.
Yeah.
You can always squeeze more blood out of the turnip, too. But
in fact, do you want to mention the lean?
Sure.
Because this is something that I'd heard about around the edges, about this lean stuff that Earl Merman has been promoting throughout the county. And I always thought that would be a great thing to do if we had the bandwidth to do it. Well, Sam knows about it. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, so we are going to be introducing the lean methodology, and lean is also known as the Toyota way. And it is a way to look at any process, and to the tenets are twofold. One is to eliminate waste. That's the very basic thing. You look through and you just go, you look at every step and see if you can eliminate wasteful steps. The second one is that you actually have the people that are doing the work do the problem solving. And so I've used it in other organizations. I think it's a very powerful tool, looking at a couple different ways to introduce it into our organization. And some of the language that I use for that, Frank, is not just cost cutting, but really increasing efficiency, so that we're getting more work done for the same amount of FTEs, et cetera. So we're looking at that on a number of different fronts, everything from recapturing our utility revenues to then bringing this methodology in and looking at things like procurement. How do we buy our stuff? And that can be, I think we've got a lot of efficiency to gain there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can I make a comment?
You bet.
Can I talk now?
Yes, yep. Go ahead.
Comment. I think, you know, but I apologize. I really haven't heard the audience side of the comment. Yeah. I've kind of been hearing, I can hear kind of Steve and Brad and I guys, and I can hear Sam. I think we're really driven here by what we have in terms of facilities. And we have our report from Harold. We know where we're at, pretty much, in terms of capital improvements we have to do. And it's, you know, really, if we all look at this and say it's irresponsible for us not to do anything. So we're embarking on doing something, and that's really what the public is asking. And so I'm kind of really excited that we're giving the reins to staff to kind of, you know, ride this through and help us get to a better place in terms of where the port's at, particularly with its facilities.
Thanks, Pete.
That's it.
Okay, so since this is a budget hearing, I guess this is the second reading, so we need to resolve.
It's not the hearing.
I'm sorry, this is not a hearing. This is a meeting where we need to have a resolution on the second reading. is whether we want to adopt this third version of the budget to go to the hearing. Is that correct?
Whether you want to direct and send this budget, this version of the budget to the hearing.
Yeah. Right.
It's scheduled for Wednesday.
And since this is the second reading of this budget, mm-hmm. this is when we decide that, mm-hmm. yes, this is the budget draft we want to send. Mm-hmm. So, with that in mind, I move we approve this budget, that we send this budget to the hearing.
I second it.
Did you hear that, Pete?
I did, and my vote would be yes.
Okay. All in favor? Aye. Okay.
Aye.
Okay, so this is the budget, then we'll be taking to the budget hearing.
Yeah, okay. This Wednesday. Great. Thank you.
Since that's all we have on the agenda today, this meeting's adjourned.
Right, Commissioner Hanke, thank you.